We made this.
Hi there, I'm Matt Latham and you're listening to another episode of Pick a Disc. We're now at the ripe old age of 22. Well, it just blows my mind that we're there. Anyway, this episode I am talking to Chris Haig, who's come back to talk about Amy Studd's Full Smiles, an album that I quite like, and you'll find out how much a bit later on. We talk about the songs on there, we talk about the different versions that we have, because we have different versions of the album, who'd have thought? We also discuss a bit about the songwriting, the perhaps marketing of Amy at the time, and we then start to talk a bit more about what she ended up doing later on in life. And we just talk about the album a lot. I really enjoyed this recording this episode. I love this chap, Chris. It's great. So before I reveal and press play on the interview, remember to, you know, subscribe to us if you're not subscribed to us before. We're on all your podcast apps of choice, etc., etc. Follow We Made This on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. We're under Pick a Disc, Instagram, Pick a Disc, Facebook, Pick a Disc. We've got a Facebook group. The link is in the show notes. And, you know, the iTunes thing of lying about us and saying we're really good and give us 5 stars. So, let's talk to Chris. So, Chris of the Haig variety. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, before we begin on the album in general, the usual icebreaker section. The other Chris Wilson, actually there's been several Chrises that guest starred. Chris Wilson currently has the record for having the most downloads for an episode for his Limp Bizkit one. I can actually announce, Chris, that I think that in terms of Instagram, I think one of the Sophie Alex Baxter promo images I had currently has the record for the most interactions.
Oh, wow.
On Instagram, yeah, but it was more or less just a picture of Sophie Alex Baxter that I had with some of my usual wry, witty commentary. Unfortunately, okay. Unfortunately, it hasn't translated into listens, which is a bugbear, but that one Instagram picture is still top of insights section, insights bit of my other Picky Disc Instagram account. So you've got that.
I have that. I will treasure that. I'll be like, listen, you may well want to listen to Limp Bizkit, but who do you want to look at? Sophie Alex Baxter, of course. So, I mean, there's no accounting for taste. I can't be attracted to women, so I'm kind of screwed, but, you know, it's fair.
But yeah, no, I just thought that was an interesting factoid to do it. So
I have a little gem to hold on to. I'm like, yeah, it might not be the most listened to because I have the obsessive love of pop music that it's not widely spread, I get that, but at least, you know, the Instagram posts or one of them is pretty good, so I'm happy with that.
You've joined the pantheon of guests that have come back for a second visit, a second round.
I am the bad penny that keeps turning up, so yes.
Yeah, so you're picking another disc for us today.
I have.
Would you like to tell the people which disc you've picked?
I have chosen Amy, and I'm really good. I'm honestly don't know if I'm going to mess up a surname or not. Amy Stutz. First album, which is False Smiles.
Great pick. So why have you picked this album?
I picked it. I mean, it's one of those where it's like we'll go into it in terms of more when I first heard it and that sort of thing. It was an album that I picked. And I literally picked it, I remember buying it, all that sort of thing, that ended up being quite a formative album and ended up being quite, I suppose, edifying in the sense of it helped me get through relatively moody teenage years, and it's quite good for that sort of thing, so it was kind of like perfectly timed, really. And I remember upon first listen, because up until that point, I'd kind of known who Amy Stutz was in the sense of I'd heard a couple of the lead singles, and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool, this is fine, and that sort of thing. Didn't think of the album, and then when I purchased the album, the whole track list, which when we discuss the track list, I've got a point about that, because I've realised my CD is different to a lot of the standard versions.
We'll talk about that sort of thing.
But every song on it, I just, even if I didn't relate to it at that time, it related during some point of my adolescence, during a very specific period. And so it's been kind of a joy when I was thinking, like, okay, so what are the albums that, if not have shaped, then have had this kind of impact? And this was at the top of the list, really.
I've talked about, I must have mentioned like the idea of top tier albums, especially with the recent 20th episode where I talked about The Streets and how it's pretty much gone into my top tier, my top tier is like top 10 albums, but it currently has about 15 of them. And whenever I made a list of my top 10 albums, the one that I always snuck in at number 10, because that always had to be there, was Four Smiles by Amy Stud. Yeah. And yeah, so this is like one of my top 10. Well, one of my, like, there's about 15 of them there because new albums keep coming out. But yeah, my top tier albums, this is like the same level I'd put The Wages of Fear from Tellison all the way back in episode 13 or 14. Yeah, so this is up there for me as well. Yeah, so. So this is going to be an interesting conversation between us.
Yeah, that's good. That should be, you know, because it is something where it's, for me personally, it's one of those albums where I listened to it and was very obsessive over it for, like I said, a very specific amount of time. Kind of, not exactly moved on, but, you know, in the way that you can love an album and then not having listened to it for years or, you know, a real chunk of time, come back to it and then you get that immediate, it's almost like a little rush in your veins when you listen to it. You're like, oh, this meant such a, you know, and it's a bit like the, you know, the Proofs and the Madelines thing, where it's such a rush of memory and a very specific memory at that it just takes you back and you just realize, okay, this album is really important for these number of reasons.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's quite similar for me as well. And there's a lot of relatability with the album. We'll get into a bit more detail a bit later on. So before we go into the album itself, how did you find out about Amy Stud? And when, do you remember when you first listened to the album, when you first got it?
I do. Okay. So first part of the question, so I first listened to her, I think it was on the radio, because there was a time when the lead single, Just a Little Girl, was on quite a bit. Because, you know, we'll talk about the tracks as well, but it has this kind of, like, very gentle, the verses are quite chilled out and minor, and then it has a very kind of propulsive chorus, and, you know, it was just on the radio for a bit, and I remember listening and thinking, oh, okay. And then the second song, Misfit, which I still remember the video to, because I think one of the Panabeka sisters is in it. I think she's playing like her rival or something in it.
Really?
I think so. It's either Danielle or it's Kay. I think it's Danielle.
As in like Caitlin Snow?
Caitlin Snow. I mean, I know her as Layla from Sky High, because that was about roughly in the same time. Sky High was 2005, and this album came out in 2003.
Oh, okay.
I think so, unless I'm just having like a complete like mishmash of things. But for some reason in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, it's one of the Panabaka sisters.
No, I think you might be right, because I've got an image of who you might be thinking of.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, so I just actually loaded up the YouTube video, because I had a... You sound like Stomach Thunder, because there's another video with it. There's another video Amy Stud's with another kind of recognisable face in it I was going to throw at you. But I was looking at it now, and yeah, and it's the first bit, and it's bloody hell.
I think it's
Kaylee,
like
from the Flash.
Yeah, I swear it's because she's playing like her rival. She's playing like the popular girl to Amy's misfit, and there's like a bit in a bedroom. Basically, I saw this when I was about 12, and it just stuck with me because it was a really catchy song. It still is a really catchy song, but it was a really catchy song, and I liked the video because it sort of had that same. And it was roughly about the same time as well, that kind of Avril Lavigne kind of punk, kind of accessible kind of energy to it. Really enjoyed that, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, this is cool. As someone, you know, like, I walked into high school as gay, but I didn't know it, fat, and I did, and a nerd, and quite tall, so I was like, oh, wow, yeah, I have, it's like a buffet of things for other kids to pick me on for. So this whole kind of outsider thing was really spoke a lot to me. In terms of your second question, when did I first hear it? So I was on holiday in Malta, of all places, and I really distinctly remember this because I loved the album. I'd heard it, or I'd heard, you know, the songs and everything, and there was like their equivalent of like a HMV in the Malta airport as we were leaving, and I just had enough to buy the album, because I'd been listening to like a probably way too old for me, like audiobook of like, I think it was like a Ruth Rendell or something. I was like, oh, okay, I'll just listen to this. Saw the album, had enough, bought it, remembered walking up into the plane and getting sat down and all that sort of thing, and then just sat and just listened to the album. And it's not a very long flight, it's only about 3 hours, 2.5, 3 hours. And I remember listening to it at least 3 times the whole way through. And that's the memory I most associate with it in terms of actually sitting down and listening to the album was very much, oh wow, this album is amazing. And there's no skippable tracks, or in the sense of there's no filler, even though certain ones obviously fit certain times and all that sort of thing. But I just remember sitting down listening to it. I think I read a book the first time, and then once it got to the end, because I didn't even have an iPod then, it was still this really chunky, like Discman sort of thing, this CD player. This shows you how old it is. You know, I didn't have an iPod at that stage. I remember just listening to it and just being like, oh wow, this is really good. And so then once it got to the end, I restarted it, put the book away, and I was like, okay, I actually need to like listen to this and just enjoy it. So I have a lot of, it's probably my very first sort of very active listening experience. Because in my household, it was a very kind of smorgasbord of different influences. So my dad liked a lot of prog rock, and my mum liked a lot of kind of 70s pop and disco, but they also shared a love of, say, Queen and ABBA and the Jacksons, and there was just random kind of elements kind of thrown in. But I just had that growing up. It wasn't like an active listening experience, whereas this was the first time I'd sort of consciously really bought an album and sat down and listened to it with the express purpose of just trying to get as much out of it as I could. That's probably why it has such a connection.
Oh, okay. Because
yeah,
I can't remember the exact amount of time I remember first learning of her, but in my research, what I didn't realise was that the gap in between Just a Little Girl and Misfit is nearly 11 months. In terms of single releases. Mm. So Just a Little Girl was released on the 1st of July, 2002, which was like about a month or so after Complicated came out by Avril Lavigne, because the Avril comparison is going to come up in a minute. But then like Misfit came out in like June, like a few weeks before the release of the album. And I can't remember, I don't have a memory of when I first listened to it, which is a bit of a shame because like, I do have like key memories of the first time I listened to a few songs from other like favorite albums. But of me buying it, I have a very vivid memory of it. It's very similar to like the memory I have of when I bought Grand Uncle for free, as I mentioned in the previous episode, where basically I went to a shop and bought two albums at the same time. This was like a couple of months after it came out. So, I think I had money from my 18th birthday because I was 18 in the October of 2003. And, I remember like just catching the bus into Warsaw, and I think I just had some money to spend. And I think I was buying, like, I was in the Virgin Megastore in Warsaw.
Oh, yeah.
But back when they were, I think. And, and I was going to go and get some DVDs, I think. It was a couple of months afterwards because they had like some of the charting albums on the one of the displays, and they had like an offer for where you can buy two CDs for like 20 quid or something, or 25, just to like, well, basically it was cheaper than buying two single albums. And False Smiles was there, and I remember picking up and looking at it, and I also remember buying another album, I think, at the same time that was part of the offer, but it was like not a charting album at the time. And that's another album, whilst not a top tier album of mine, and perhaps gets it's an album I really like, but perhaps not a second tier either, but one I do remember listening to. I bought Full Smiles alongside Angels with Dirty Faces by Sugar Babes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So I bought, and that's an album I think is like one of the last kind of good, intelligent pop albums of that era for quite a few years, alongside Full Smiles. So that was like two, that was a really good day in terms of buying albums. But I do remember buying Full Smiles, taking it home, listening to it, and then my sister getting really, really annoyed because she wanted it as well. And she she didn't like the fact that I bought it. So,
I mean, fair.
Yeah, but I let her listen to it, I think. I can't remember. Must have, eventually.
Yeah, you must have.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I'm assuming she did.
I was like, I've fully got a vision of you. Once you're done, you're just going to text her and go, but listen, did I ever actually let you listen to that? And just, yeah. Just kicking off a whole kind of words in the Latham family.
Yes. But, yeah, so that's I have a vivid memory of buying that alongside the Sugar Babes album. In a very weird twist of the usual format, I'm going to comment on some of the review of the album first, because I think it informs a lot of the album, and I think perhaps a lot of misconception when people think of Amistad back in the day. And touching on something you just also said, this is from John O'Brien from AllMusic, and it's a good primer for what we'll be talking about. Teenage Rebellion, Bags of Attitude, an album full of radio-friendly guitar pop tunes. You can understand the comparisons with Avril Lavigne, but that would be a disservice to Amy Stutt, as while the Canadian Static Girls' rock chick persona sometimes appears contrived, Stutt's debut is carried out with conviction. One look at the credits reveals that it would be unfair to lump Stutt with the majority of her manager Simon Fuller's other manufactured acts, as she penned every one of the rather prolific 14 tracks, alongside some of the more illustrious songwriters such as Gary Barlow, Kathy Dennis, and Karen Poole. And a lot of what we'll probably be talking about soon is going to tie into what pretty much summed up in there, so that's a nice primer. And I think it describes the album quite well. And I think also one of the reasons why I think it is one of the best and perhaps underrated pop albums we've had in the early noughties.
Yeah, no, yeah. It is completely underrated to the point where if you mention it, most people won't have any idea what you're talking about. And I'm like, I will get quite passionate about it.
Oh,
nice. And I will get quite, you know, not defensive, but I'll be kind of like, what do you mean you don't know? What do you mean you don't know who English singer-songwriter Amy Stutt is? And they're like, is she the just a little girl? I'm like, she's more than that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, she was quite, she was referenced in 50 Shades of Grey, for God's sake.
Oh my God, watch it. I've never
read
it. Wait, the book or the film?
I've not read it myself, but I do remember when it was coming out, a lot of people were tweeting her Twitter account, because there's a bit where the main character, whatever her name is, mentions the actual song Misfit as well. So,
yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm totally going to look that up, because I really want to see, like, the chunk of text where they're just like, oh, yes. During this weird, weird, weird relationship, of course I'm going to listen to Amy Stutt, and I'm like, that's forgivable.
Yeah.
Nothing else about 50 Shades is, but, you know, anyway.
Yes, yeah, so, as we begin, I'm going to ask you, when you first think of this album, which songs jump out to you as your highlights?
Oh, God. Honestly, it's one of the few albums, because normally there's like a few that surge to the front in the sense of, oh, these are the ones that I listen to the most, or that sort of thing. It changes. So there was a real period of time where, for some reason, I really liked If Only. And I don't know, because it's still very catchy and very hooky and all that sort of thing, but it's a much more subdued song compared to some of the others. I mean, I think Misfit is always up there. I think, the 1-2 punch of Happy Now and Gonna Be Fine are always up there. There was a period about 18 months ago when I just kept having the chorus to Suspiria Mind going through my head. And so I'd just be sat there going, kind of tapping the beat, and I'm going, what the hell is it? You know when you know a song, but you cannot remember what it's called or who's singing it, and you just have to kind of like work out in your head. And it took me a full 20 minutes to kind of go, da, 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 and just work it through.
Trying to work backwards of...
Yeah, you just get, you're supposed to try to like build the fragment out. You're going like, okay, every day I'm more disappointed. And just kind of, and just try to fill it in yourself or work out the beat and all that sort of thing. So yeah, Suspiria Mind is something else entirely. Yeah, and then it's like, I love Under the Thumb, Misfit, just Little Girls, really good. And it's just, the problem is I can go around to each of the tracks that I listen to on my specific version and go, yep, okay, this is fantastic for this reason, this is fantastic for this reason, that sort of thing.
Okay, okay. I'll ask this now, which version did you get? Because there's three.
Yeah, so my version is the same one that's listed on the All Music, so mine is... 12 tracks long. And mine basically runs, if I'll do it, so it goes, Just a Little Girl, Misfit, Under the Thumb, If Only, Beautiful Lie, Ladder in My Tights, Carry Me Away, Happy Now, Gonna Be Fine, Suspiria Mind. I'm gonna keep saying Suspiria Mind. If someone doesn't make Suspiria Mind a thing.
Yeah.
Suspiria Mind, and then, Seconds Away, and then I can't remember, is because I've heard Testify a lot, and I'm like, I can't remember if that was on my version or not.
No, I think because Spotify handily has several versions of it. So you've got the 2000.
No, yeah, my last bit is, yeah, it's Superior Mind, Testify, and then Seconds Away. Yeah, that's my version.
Yeah, so I think the original first release was the 12-track one. Now, the one I had was the 14, where he added Testify and Nobody. And I think I remember when I went to re-listen to False Miles a couple of years ago, it only had 12 tracks on, but I didn't take notice. And when it went Seconds Away and it jumped back up to Just a Little Girl, I was like, hang on, where's Testify?
Yeah.
And then there's I think the release that, and then I think a re-release in 2004 included the cover version of Sheryl Crow's All I Want to Do, which I think was stuck in between Under the Thumb and If Only.
Yeah, well, it's like there's a song on one of the there's three or four songs that I don't remember, and I'm not sure if I've actually listened to it because I've not really investigated it. So the All I Want to Do, I've probably heard at some stage, but there's like a song called Going Out of My Mind. I have no idea what that song is. I've never heard of it before. So Going Out of My Mind wasn't on.
I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just throw me saying Going Out of My Mind, because Going Out of the Mind, hang on, because I've currently got the 12-track version on the one monitor in front of me, and I've got Wikipedia with the 15-track on me. So, so you've got Superior Mind, Going Out of My Mind, then Seconds Away, then Testify, then no. Oh, so Testify was on the original one. So
Testify was, but they switched, so the version, it was Testify was track 11, and then it finished on Seconds Away.
Yeah. Okay, so the one that I've got, so it's Just a Little Girl, it's pretty much all the same, and then you get to Gonna Be Fine, Superior Mind, Going Out of My Mind, Seconds Away, Testifying Nobody. Oh, that's just blowing my mind, because Going Out of My Mind has always been part of that album for me. Yeah, so like...
Oh God, I'm gonna have to listen to it now, because I feel... Like, I mean, there's three songs on there which I'm like, oh, they're not part of my sort of internal canon of the album. But
yeah, this is going to be weird. I'm just going to step away from the mic because I think I've got the CD behind me, because this is now...
Okay.
Yeah, give me a sec.
I think I still do. Oh my God, yeah, I have it at my mum and dad's. I'm just thinking.
Okay, I'm back. I still have the CD.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, so it's got the 19 recordings, Polydor, 2003. No, yeah, the one I've got is 14 tracks.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was variation, because, like I said, I picked mine up in the... I literally don't even remember what the airport... The main airport in Malta might have been Valletta Airport or something. I got it from their thing, because I was worried, like, oh, is it going to not work? And then I realised, oh, no, CDs don't have regions. You know, in the sense of like DVDs. It's just because I'd started doing DVDs, that's how I learned about the region thing and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I wonder if I've just picked up, if it's like a European version or something that only has 12 in that specific order. Oh.
Well, so, oh, which is, wow. Because
This is hard-hitting journalism investigation, the fact we've cracked this. Just going like...
It's a shame that you've never heard of Going Out My Mind.
Well, I tell you what, I'm adding it to my YouTube queue. But how would you describe it before I listen?
It's a mix. It's poppy, but kind of the kind of minor key, sadder poppy songs that she has,
okay.
And also answer phone message.
Ooh. Okay, I'm intrigued. Yeah, so it's on YouTube, so I'm going to add that. I'll add, what's the other, is it Nobody? Is that the last one?
Yeah, to me, that's the end of the, yeah, so that's the last one. Man, this is blowing my mind as well. If we, talking about the album as a whole at the moment again, because I do want to talk about individual songs properly. I think what got me when I first listened to it is that, going back to the whole Carried Out With Conviction bit, in that All Music review, is that, I think because, I mean, like, Stud's the first person that's, like, the first writing credit on each of the songs. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how much creative input she had with them. And I think a lot of the reason I think perhaps Simon Fuller's management signed her up originally was that I think she was writing songs from about 5 years old and then just spent a lot of, like, when she was 12 to, like, 13, writing loads of songs as well. And I think a lot of the appeal of why she was signed was that she did a lot of her own writing. And I think one of the key things that probably separates her from a lot of contemporary artists at the time is that there's a lot of her in each of the songs, and it gives it a very tight, or at least cohesive, through line throughout all the songs on the album. So like you can kind of tell it's someone's voice, and then you've got the added flavour of the other songwriters added on top of it. Whereas perhaps with, I mean, I think I can't remember that much. Like, for example, if we went back to when you first was on with Psychedelic Spexter and Triple Light Fantastic, as good as the album was, you never got the full sense that it was about Psychedelic Spexter. It was Psychedelic Spexter singing songs she'd want to sing with other people, giving her songs. Whereas this album feels like it's more about her than like just like a singer singing random songs. There's a lot of her in this. And that's one of the things that attracted me to this album so much. And it kind of sweeps you under your feet. Because you listen to Just a Little Girl in Misfit, and because of the Avril comparisons, you've got, oh, okay, this is perhaps the Britons trying to cash in on the, like, kind of pop punk, teenage girl kind of market that suddenly Avril Lavigne suddenly reached out and opened. But then when you sit down and listen to the album, you see past that, and you think, oh, hang on, this is an artist with a lot more to say, and it's nothing like you think it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's all, I agree. I mean, if we're comparing it to kind of my first, you know, appearance, which if you haven't checked it out, please do. Mm-hmm. Just doing a plug on a plug.
Yeah.
So the Sophia Lispector the thing, yeah, I would say they're, in a way, they are both reflections, but different refractions, if it were. So if you look at Sophia Lispector, I would say the music is a reflection of personality and what she wanted to display at that time, even though it wasn't written by her. With Amy, you have a reflection of kind of her personal experience and her subjective, what she was going through and that sort of thing. So I think they're both valid. You know, there's no wrong way to be kind of, not exactly a pop star, but there's no wrong way to be a singer, and there's no wrong way to kind of chart your own path and that sort of thing. But I think it's like comparing apples and oranges. Secondly, and I agree, and she, you know, in terms of Amy, what she was doing, and I understand the Avril comparisons, but it was kind of, you know, it was kind of continuing on this long line of female singer-songwriters who were sort of reflecting and carrying stuff from the previous decade onwards. So you had the, you know, singer-songwriters in the 70s who were pulling from the 60s and, you know, the 90s and that sort of thing. So the one I always think of with with Amy isn't necessarily Avril, although that is a huge comparison. You know, there's artists like Fifi Dobson. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's great. But she... So, Fifi Dobson is a bit like... She is a Canadian artist who was doing a lot of kind of similar stuff to Avril Lavigne, but it was a bit more actually mixed in with punk and mixed in with, like, the Riot Girl stuff from the 90s. So she did a lot of, like, Canadian rock, that sort of thing. And she's the one I always think of with this. And not necessarily this album, because I think this album is way more radio-friendly, but in regards to... her second album, I would say those comparisons are there. But then you see it, that kind of thing emerge more later down the line anyway. So, you know, one I always remember, and she only seems to have had one kind of major hit. I'm sure she's, you know, had amazing songs and everything, but you look at, say, Sandy Tom, who became really famous, or gained notoriety for her song "I Wish I Was a," I can't remember the full name.
I wish I was a
punk rocker with flowers in my hair. Yeah, Summer of 69, all that sort of thing. So there was that, and then kind of towards the end of the 2000s, that's where you saw the whole thing of a woman writing her own material and becoming really successful for it across the board. So the example I will always use is, well, you know, you can look at Madonna, you can look at Lady Gaga, who, you know, co-writes all of her songs. You look at Marina and the Diamonds, you look at, you know, Katy Perry, you look at all these kind of bigger artists who really do have a real hand in their work, and they're all different. So some of them are darker, some of them are lighter, some of them, you know, they like to chop and change, all that sort of thing. So I think it's interesting that you can kind of tie Amy and this album into, you know, this kind of long lineage. You know, someone who I think is doing very similar is Sky Ferreira, who has always, I think she had a similar path in the sense of she's been writing songs since she was 6 or 7. She got a recording deal when she was about 14, 15. You know, it's been a very young path, and it was that kind of wunderkind path where they were like, okay, I'm going to try and push this out as early as possible, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Okay. So if we talk about a few of the songs on the album in general, and like, because like, perhaps not every single one of them, because we might be here for hours and hours, and as we're recording, it's a Sunday night and I've got work in the morning, so
I'm gonna say, yeah,
so we'll try and rein it in. There are, like, I personally can't think of a bad song on the album. The first one perhaps that stands out, I think, that I want to talk about first is Under the Thumb. Purely because in the track listing, this comes after Just a Little Girl and Misfit. Under the Thumb is the one I think is when the subversion of what you're listening to kicks in. So it's whereas, like, it, when you listen to the lyrics, there's a lot more dark, more adult themes, or at least the idea of teenagers, because I think she was only, what, 16 or 17, maybe even younger when she wrote it, dealing with things that, like, in a way that can, like, again, contemporary artists perhaps wouldn't have done. So Under the Thumb is pretty much playing on the idea of being controlled by a partner, but also there's also connotations and references to sex and physical relationships as well, but then and perhaps not fully being able to talk about it with each other, and, like, not really understanding what's going on between two people. And
yeah,
it's like topics that, I mean, when you listen to that just after Misfit, which was like the big single just about being, like, punky and rebellious, it kind of, like, yeah, oh, okay, this is a bit different. And, like, I think a couple of years before was the second album by Billy Piper, Walk of Life. And I think Billy was the same age then as Amy was now. And that album, the Walk of Life album, is the one with Day and Night, Something Deep Inside, and the song Walk of Life. There's nothing on that which is as kind of serious or kind of or feels like it's from the thoughts of a teenage girl's diary. It's a lot more Hollywood in terms of how relationships are portrayed, and kind of it romanticizes the teenage like relationships kind of thing. Whereas Under Thumb is the first time you see that this album is going to be a bit more realistic in terms of how it portrays it.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah, exactly. It is a more nuanced take on it. Kind of thing.
Yeah, I want to quickly mention If Only as well, because I know you mentioned it, because If Only is one of my favourite songs of the album. If actually perhaps a song that I'd probably put in a list of like my favourite songs of all time. Perhaps not as obsessed with it as I used to be in the past, but it kind of, at the time, it captured my mindset as just a mopey 18-year-old, just like a mopey 18-year-old who should like not be acting like a 14-year-old. It's one of these that's like, there's a couple of songs on there which feel simple but have capture a mood and just seem to feel, just capture something perfectly, because the music kind of like chunders on, and there's lyrics like watching life pass by, how long will it be and stuff. But then there's the idea that, and I've always had this image that if there was like a music video for it, that like she's just like sat on like on a train in one of those old fashioned like coach trains, like you get in like the Hogwarts Express or something, and she's just staring out the window and you're just seeing all these British countryside go past, and you got the monotony, like the only sound you hear is the monotony of the train engine, and it's like, but you're kind of watching things go past by, and you're like, you're a casual observer to things and stuff, and I've always just and that always just captures what the message of the song is correctly, and it's very simple, and and the chorus sounds exactly like a live journal entry, but it's just so relatable.
Yeah,
I just remember
it's aching. It's, you know, wistful. It's this kind of longing, and yeah. Oh God, yeah. When you're a teenager, it's perfect. It so perfectly kind of encapsulates that feeling of I am. You know, I'm even in a relationship that sucks, or I am single and want to be in a great relationship, that sort of thing. And it's really weird that, you know, obviously it comes right after Under the Thumb. So it is a weird sort of 180, really. Because you have, like, Just a Little Girl and Misfit, if they're sort of paired off together as, like, songs about independence and finding your thing. Then you've got Under the Thumb as, like, the really dark negative side of a relationship. And then you've got If Only as this, not exactly positive, but this kind of more, this lighter, more, you know, wistful, dreamy, kind of like, oh, if only I could find someone who would understand, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and like, it's like something that was always in the back of, being like emotionally vulnerable at the moment, but always in the back of my mind, particularly like stroppy teenage me, back in the day and stuff. And it just connected at the time, like as you said, it kind of, where you kind of listened to it at the right time, and it,
yeah,
and hearing that was like there as well. Any songs that you want to talk about?
I will say, for me, I mean, like I said, I can go through each of the songs and say, okay, this was really great at this point in my life, that sort of thing. For me, because the more upbeat ones, I always had a bit more. Not exactly fun, but the ones I listen to maybe a bit more so. Like I said, Superior Mind, or as it's now going to be called, Superior Mind, because I can't say the word superior, apparently. That, for me, it has maybe my favourite chorus on the thing, because it's quite cynical in a way, but it's such kind of a major upbeat chorus. You know, where it's like, every day I'm more disappointed by the world, you know, I'm losing my faith. And it's just kind of this buoyant. It does what I think I like in quite a lot of pop songs, which is it mixes the joy and the sadness. You know, and Robin said the same thing when she was making like Dancing on My Own and that sort of thing. She says they are going to be so depressing lyrics, but it's going to be set to such a joyful beat that you are going to have that kind of comparison, and I think that really works. And then for me, there's also, like I said, it's before, it's like kind of like a 1-2 hit pairing, which is happy now and then going to be fine. Because happy now is a very, it's one of the, not exactly a low point in terms of quality, far from it, but I mean in terms of mood. Because it's very, I suppose you'd call it a bit emo. It's very kind of like, you know, I hope you're happy and now I'm on my own and all that sort of thing. So that is like, it's kind of the darkest hour, you know, that sort of thing. And then it's paired with gonna be fine, which is one of the lightest moments, and it's quite invigorating. And it's just saying, you know, you're one step closer to finding your way, you know.
I mean,
even though you think you're out of time, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Which I still love.
Yeah. I mean, considering that the amount of, like, headcanon I've put on this album myself, you know, I've actually noticed that Gonna Be Fine's actually quite positive in terms of, I mean, like, Misfit and Just a Little Girl arguably are kind of positive songs in a certain way, but in terms of like their outlook on life, whereas Gonna Be Fine, think about it is more like being mentally, like how to like, kind of like perk yourself up mentally.
Yeah. It's more of a pick me up kind of song. If Just a Little Girl and Misfit are kind of like, you know what, screw the world, you know, it's just you versus the world, kind of, don't change, don't conform, that sort of thing. Which is great, and it's kind of that great anarchic energy or whatever. But yeah, no, Gonna Be Fine is probably the most kind of uniformly positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no, that one has a special place in my heart, just because it's one of the, 'cause before kind of really, I don't want to say it. Before kind of pick yourself up, self-improvement, positive songs were kind of a trend. So like at the turn of the 10s, like 2011, every major pop star was putting out some kind of like, do you know what? You're great and you're going to, you know, do all this and you're going to be fab and all that sort of thing, which is very nice, but when they sort of came one after the other, after the other, after the other, it did come across a bit cynical. They were like, oh, we can make some real easy money off this kind of self-empowerment thing.
If this is right, the co-writers for Gonna Be Fine match the same as Going Out of My Mind. They're Pete Lewinson and Steve Lewinson. Quick question.
Oh, cool.
Do you know who they are?
No, not a clue.
One of them is still in a band. They both were members of a band. One of them has left. Of a very long running, as in started in the 80s.
Oh, right.
Soul band. Now, I'm going to let you try and see if you can guess. Or are you?
Oh, God. Soul band in the 80s. No, I've got a bit of a cold. My brain's not firing.
The co-writers for those songs, one of them, well, were and are members of Simply Red.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah.
The other song I want to briefly mention as well is actually the third song. It's like the third song, the only song that we've yet to talk about from the same writing team as the same writing combination as Misfit and Under the Thumb, which is Ladder in My Tights, which is like another one of the kind of like poppy, punky, rebel-y songs with the kind of blanked out swear, deliberately blanked out swear in the chorus. But I want to briefly mention, because it was a guy called David Eriksson, who's worked with like loads of like Norwegian artist who's worked with quite a lot of stuff, including Sheryl Crow. The third writing credit is to a lady called Karen Ann Poole, which I briefly mentioned in that All Music review. So they're responsible for Misfit Under the Thumb and Ladder in My Tights. Now, Karen Ann Poole was a member of a pop duo with her sister Shelley called Aisha's Attic, and who was like in the mid 90s had a couple of songs released, a couple of albums. Aisha Rules the World is a really good album. On that is one of the best pop songs ever made, and I will fight anyone who disagrees with me on that. It's a song called I Am, I Feel, and is one of the best pop songs, and it kind of has a, like a, not cool response, but the you listen to I Am, I Feel, and you can feel the DNA of Aisha's Attic in Misfit Under the Thumb and Ladder in My Tights. Ladder in My Tights could, if you squint and tilted your head and perhaps didn't have the stud factor, as I'll probably call it, could feel like it's an Aisha's Attic song, which to me is not a bad thing in the slightest. There's that kind of like offbeat kind of quirky nature to it, which just like this ends up being quite catchy and memorable. And but with that the song as well, you have the kind of the different layers of who she is as an artist at that point. So you've got the Avril layer, which is the usual, okay, that was probably the people who were probably buying it off Misfit and just a little girl probably would have listened to this song a lot more than the others. But then there's an element of it that you have the more believable layer that you can actually feel as if it's there's a history to what she's singing about and that it's from her history. I can't. So you have that as well.
Yeah.
And then you have the Aisha's Attic factor, which just has that extra bit of quirkiness to it. So you can kind of feel the Karen Ampoule aspects of it. And yeah. It also has a great chorus.
Yeah. Well, no, it does. I mean, I don't know a lot about Alicia's Attic. I'll be honest, as you were talking, I have added I Am, I Feel to my What's Later queue. Because I'm like, okay, I'm going to check this out. Because I've seen them a little bit on, like, Top of the Pops, you know, back in the 90s or 80s, that sort of thing. The one I always think of in regards to this album, if we're talking kind of cool connections, is a co-write for Seconds Away, which Amy wrote with Kathy Dennis. And, you know, in case you know, listeners have never really heard of Kathy Dennis, she's basically one of the UK's most prolific songwriters, and she's written kind of incredible stuff for a variety of artists.
There's talking about Seconds Away, and I'm not going to go on about Kathy Dennis that much. If you want to hear my thoughts on Kathy Dennis, one of the best songwriters we've had in this country, do listen to the previous episode I had with Chris about Sophie X Baxter. There was a very recent review on the time recording about a week and a half ago that Amy made in promotion of her latest album, where they ask her about to choose a song from each of her albums to talk about, and she chooses this one. And I'll read what she said in that review, in that interview. This is one of two of my favourite songs on the first album. I actually prefer the original demo I did with Kathy Dennis, but the album version is nice too. I love this one because it's about my first sexual encounters and trying to describe it, which makes it fairly unlike any of my other songs I've written to this day. It's really hooky, and I used to play it on repeat on my headphones to fall asleep to on the train. That was from Amy herself. And it'd be very, very honest, very open about what the songs are about. And I think it's, to me, I think it was actually, because it's originally the last song on the album. Or was it the last song? Was it the last song on your album?
It's the last on my album. It's the last song on my version of the album. Yeah,
yeah, and I think it because I think this is track 12 on mine. I might have to pretty much post a picture of my version of the album and the track listing.
Well,
on the socials.
If you remind me, I'll pick my copy up and I will do mine as a comparison.
Yeah. But so I think originally it was the ending, and it works quite well as a closing track, but it's never been my closing track. And it's kind of nice kind of drifting off of what you've just been listening to. But then the album comes back with, for me, then Testify kicks in after that, and then comes with the song Nobody, and Nobody ends the song for me itself. So, is there any other, before we move on, is there any other songs that you want to quickly mention before we move on?
I think we've spoken about them, but every song has its own thing that you could kind of focus on and say, oh, I really enjoy this, I really enjoy that. I think the main thing for this album is just to sit, no matter what version it is, you know, ideally if it's your first time listening, then find the longest version you can and just sit through and enjoy it and just absorb it, really.
I think ideally, if you find the full version on Spotify, if you skip All I Want to Do from the track listing, but then perhaps listen to it at the end as like an additional, like, out of interest, because then I think it kind of breaks up the flow of it. Before we move on directly to the closing, the latter bit of the podcast formula, there's two things I kind of want to briefly mention. On that same interview that I mentioned before, they ask her about the songs off False Smiles. I think she has kind of like fond memories of the songs themselves, because like this is what she says: when I hear these songs now, I think, damn, they sound like they could be on the radio now. They still sound really fresh. I also think there are very few, maybe no weak tracks, and I remember all the fun I had writing it and taking in all my ideas to show these new producer friends I'd made and writing and recording with them. Scaring Gary Barlow, apparently, with my youthful angst. It makes me laugh. Makes me think of laughing a lot, and exacting my revenge by songs to anyone who crossed me. So, have you ever seen Amy Judd live?
I haven't. I've never had that pleasure.
That's same as well. I know she's starting to tour again with the new album, but I don't know if she performs any of her older stuff. But I have seen videos of like several years after this came out, where she does kind of like slow piano versions of like Misfit.
Yeah.
So I'm making assumptions you might play them. I'm not sure, but no. So I am actually there's a Facebook group that Amy set up for like a fan stuff, because I think particularly artists are now setting up their own Facebook groups, because it's a lot easier to be able to get information out to the diehard and stuff. And like she has that, and she and fans of hers are actually like posting about the new album and her tour, and like that she begins to tour around, and she's announcing dates. And I'm keeping an eye out, and hopefully if there's anyone near me, I definitely do want to see her live at some point, because I think she's looking for kind of weird or not your usual venues to perform in, like churches and stuff like that. So
okay.
So I'll definitely keep an eye out for that.
Same.
If people, and this is a very difficult question actually, if people like this album and want to hear other stuff by her, I usually ask the guest, particularly if it's an artist that I'm not familiar with, but in this instance, I'm perhaps more familiar with her other work than I am with yours. Is that correct?
Than of my other work, yes. Oh. You're more familiar with her other work than you are of my work. Yes. No, it's fine. I just thought it was funny. No, yeah, full disclosure, so I think about 5 years afterwards, she came up with an album called My Paper Made Men, and I kind of picked it because it's very different. It's not bad, but it is very different, and I think she even said she consciously wanted to make a very different sounding album. She wanted to go for a more kind of alternative rock kind of vibe. So I really enjoyed a couple of the singles that came out. I really enjoyed Chasing the Light. I really enjoyed Nice Boys, because I love pop music, and I was like, oh, this is really poppy and really fun. But then when I read the interview you sent over, and she was like, oh, you know, I literally wrote it as a joke, but they wanted like a more pop song. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fair. Because I've had it happen before where Marina and the Diamonds, for her first album, The Family Jewels, there's a song called Champagne, which is very kind of 80s theatrical pop. And it wasn't until I saw her live where she admitted, and she said it in an interview as well, she went, oh yeah, Champagne's the song I like the least, because they told me they needed another very poppy song on there, and I just wrote it. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's like, I'm really glad you did write this song, but it kind of comes from, like, not great motivations. But no, so in terms of My Paper Moment, that is all I've really heard. The new album is giving me incentive to kind of go back and re-listen to the second album. I don't know what your thoughts are on it.
The second album, I probably haven't listened to as much as the first one, but Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff on there.
Yeah.
I say, I say reading that, I mean, I do really like Nice Boys as a song. Chasing the Light's great. The video for Chasing the Light is great. If you not know, Amy's pretty much in she's on like a same stage type thing, just full black, and she just starts singing the chorus, starts singing the verses. But when the chorus is kicking, the first time the chorus kicks in, she gets blasted by these massively powerful fans. So, and then they kind of like, they stop for the second verse. And then for the second chorus, she gets blasted by really powerful, like, blasts of water. So kind of the intensity intensifies, for lack of a better word. And then by the time then the bridge comes in, and then for the final run of the choruses, she then gets blasted by blue paint, and all credit to her, get committed to the bit, just gets absolutely blasted for at least 30 seconds.
It's a great video.
Of paint.
It is, it's great.
And it's just like, she's just covered head to toe in it, and it's a great video. It's a great video. Yeah. Nice Boys, I'm quite surprised reading that in the same interview that she only wrote that as a joke. But I really like that one as well. She also had the song Furniture, which has a video which is like one of the darkest songs, which is like in the same vein as perhaps like the same vein as some of the dark, like the stuff that she kind of hints at in Full Smiles, which is kind of gutting. And then the latest one, Happiest Girl in the Universe. I've only listened to it a few times. I only listened to it in full about 3 or 4 times. It's one of these that invites a lot of re-listening. There's a lot of stuff to unpack in it. Some of the songs on there are great, but it's pretty much like her journey from the end of Paper Made Men to now. I think one of the songs, Sleepwalk, was written about the Brixton riots. But then she released that years ago under the name of Mercy Made Me. There's a great song called I Was Jesus in Your Veins, which kind of builds up, which is like kind of slow start, but then kind of builds up in like a similar way to like If Only Does. I need to give it more re-listens, because like at the moment I'm finding new stuff every time that I listen to it. It's just a great album, and it like pretty much encompasses who she is now, and what she's been through over the last decade and stuff. Because I'm not touched on it too much here, and I don't really want to go into details, but she's spoken with it openly and honestly that she's like had trouble with health and like spent time in a psychiatric hospital. But there's stuff on there that she talks about more openly and stuff, and a lot of that is kind of like explored in this new album, and it's like gutting in a very similar way that the Phoebe Bridgers record did, where it kind of hits you in the stomach a few times. So when I first listened to Stranger in the Alps by Phoebe Bridgers, there's a few times where I felt like I got punched in the stomach, and that happens a few times in this new one as well, in a good way, of course. So it's that kind of stuff. Anyone who's looking to try and find the next Misfit or Just a Little Girl, you're not going to find it. It's nothing like that. This is like pure concentrated Amy Stuttner with like an extra decade of things that she works, that she's now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, like I said, the last album before this came out in 2008, and obviously she's gone through stuff and it's taken her time to kind of get into the right headspace and everything. But yeah, the thing, and you should always want this for your, well, for anyone really, but you know, for your favourite artists, you just want them to be in the space where they can be, you know, creative and do all that sort of thing. But mainly you want them to be in a good mental health space, you know. So I don't really mind that it's taken this long to produce, you know, another album or, you know, some extra, or she's been able to do this or that or this or that. You know, I'm just happy that she has found, if not an equilibrium, then she's kind of on top of the stuff that she's gone through. I'm very much looking forward to listening to the new album, to giving my Paper Made Men another go, and then for False Smiles as well. I'm just happy that it's given me a chance to kind of just listen to the whole thing, like on the bus or at work, and kind of really appreciate just how solid and enjoyable and important piece of work it is.
And before we go, the final piece of the puzzle for Picky Disc is the playlist. So yes. So where you pick a song from this album that you want it to be immortalized forever.
Yeah.
Alongside all the previous picks. So this will be your second pick.
Yes.
To join it.
Yes. This is the hardest bit, because I'm just like, it's like staring in front of my children. I'm like, I love you all equally, but only one of you can go on the playlist. I will say the one that has, oh God, this is hard. This is like Sophie's Choice, but harder. Don't at me. It's fine. I will go with Gonna Be Fine, because it's meant a lot to me over the years, and it's one that I've turned to. And during a very specific point when I was a teenager, this song, in a way, without going into too many details, it sort of helped keep me alive. So it has a lot of meaning for me for that, so I'm going to say that.
As all good things must come to an end.
Yes.
This podcast. And what I actually forgotten to ask you last time, as I mentioned beforehand, is the bit where you shill anything that you want to shill.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. My voice is getting so croaky. I'm just getting over a cold. In terms of shilling, so you can find me on Twitter at @higher_boy, where I am usually talking about some kind of fun thing that I'm really enjoying. So if you want to get on that, that's great. In terms of podcasts, I am a co-host of two separate podcasts. The first of which is North by Nerdwest, which is a podcast that me and my one of my best mates, Emma Platt, do. We've been on hiatus just while things have been a bit mad for the past kind of year, 18 months, but we are planning on getting some new episodes out, so keep an eye on that. And then the other podcast I do regularly is Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, which I do with two of my favourite Canadians, which is Brandon Chermatala and Tom Caldwell, and we are going chronologically through the works of Alfred Hitchcock. So, but we also do kind of fun stuff as well, like live commentaries and discussing side projects and all that kind of stuff. But if you're a Hitchcock fan, I would say please check us out, because we are a fun podcast to check out. Apart from that, I also appear on a bunch of different podcasts regularly. So I regularly am on Amy Walker's Eccentric Earth podcast, which is kind of a surprise history podcast, and on Pete Gaskell's Smorgasbord, which is like the filthiest version of a game show that you can imagine. So that is worth checking out as well.
Okay. So, definitely check them out. And looking forward to hearing more of North by Nerdwest, actually.
Yes.
So it's good to hear that there's more, that there's... Oh, that's good, that's good. So that's it. I feel like we've managed to keep somewhat reined in.
And, I know, which is always half the struggle with me, because I am the king of the tangent, so you've done a very good job.
Yeah, it's been great to have you back on and talking about...
Oh, it's been a joy.
Oh, like one of my favourite albums. And as I said, with the Taliesin one, it's great for me not to use up one of my multiples of 10 map pick episodes on this.
Yes.
But at least it means that I'm talking to someone who loves it just as much as equally as I do.
Absolutely.
So, again, thank you ever so much for being on, Chris.
It has been a joy. And even though our versions may be different, our love is the same.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc, and I've been your host, Matthew Lavin. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This Podcast Network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/pickadisc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.